I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish.
Welcome to On In 5. Thank you for joining us. My name is Anton Ryder. I'm joined by my friends, Ethan Bonin and Austin Thomas. How are you guys doing tonight?
Somber.
I'm doing absolutely wonderful. How are you today?
I'm good. It's a little rainy out and gray skies. And as Austin said, he's a little somber because of the subject matter we've had to research over the last couple of days.
Really gray, really down in the dumps.
This is a very dark episode. This will be the darkest episode we've done to date by far. So while we've talked about the death in some of our other episodes, whether that's Peter Steele or John Denver meeting their untimely demise, or family members or band members dying or being killed or anything like that, this episode will deal entirely with death in a phenomenon known as the 27 Club.
Kind of a bizarre thing.
It's a goofy phenomenon. I think phenomenon is the right word for it.
Yeah, no, yeah, definitely fitting.
I looked into it a little bit, yeah. And it seems like musicians, actors, artists, they seem to die at a higher rate at this age than any other age. So there's actually an article by The Globe that talks about, or it's called The Globe and Mail. That's the journalism website or whatever that talks about this phenomenon to see if it's really a phenomenon at all. So what they did is they pulled apart, or they looked at 115 musicians who all died under the age of 50. And the top five common ages were 33, which had 6 deaths, 24, which had 7 deaths, 25, which had 8 deaths, 30, which had 9 deaths, and leading by well over double was 27 with 23 deaths. Remember,
pretty
the
wild.
Next leading one was 9.
Good God.
Yeah. So, and it's not to say that there's some magical force driving these people to death at this specific age, but and not even all these deaths are like self-inflicted suicides, either intentional or accidental. Like some of them are super freak accidents or car accidents or like drowning, things like that. Like it just seems that people just happen to die at this age more than any other age.
There is the idea that some people might kind of romanticize it in a way, but
yeah
at this point for sure.
Some of the actual suicides may come from wanting to be a part of this club.
That's something you got to decide on your own. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I mean, the number 27 itself has some pretty weird intricacies anyways in, like, human history. I couldn't remember the mathematics intricacies. Like, it's a weird number in general with mathematics. But human history and nature, the Spanish and Hebrew alphabet both have 27 letters. John Steinbeck wrote 27
Grapes
books.
Grapes of Wrath.
And he was the man who wrote Of Mice and Men, Grapes of Wrath. The Rubik's Cube has 27 cubes. Uranus has 27 moons. Leviticus in the Old Testament has 27 chapters. Proverbs does as well. The Holy Roman Empire was founded in 27 BC following Caesar's assassination.
We're starting already.
27 is weird. It's just it's a very reoccurring number, like just in general, for no apparent reason. Mozart even wrote 27 concertos and 27 arias. It's
arias.
Just a weird number.
Arias, yeah. We're two paragraphs in here. We're here.
We're heavy.
We're here, man. It's weird.
Ethan,
I'm gonna jump down a few small rabbit holes. But yeah, it's
Ethan,
weird.
I don't believe it
Ethan
for even a moment.
100% pulled all of this information from a website that is just trying to sell you tactical shampoos and it's just all green with like black text and just is the dirty.
I have that Dr. Bronner's Castile soap, and it's got like all the commandments on it, and like all
true,
these weird
yeah.
things from the Torah. It's weird.
I took a shower.
It's like the soap. I don't need the lesson.
The article that I got those from.
Where?
Quoted David Icke.
Yep, see? The conspiracy god himself.
Okay.
The man.
Yeah, I took a shower at Austin's house one time and used his Castile soap, and all I wanted to do was just read the instructions, and I ended up...
You get lost in the shower, man, reading that shit.
I think I came out of there with an AA in preaching.
Theology of some kind.
Theosophy, man.
Yeah. It's wild.
You know what else is wild? The topic we're on.
27, man. 27.
Yeah, the topic we're trying to cover. So we're going to break down 9 people of our choosing who left this world before their time should have been up. I'm going to start, and I'm going to start with singer, a blues singer, Janis Joplin.
Janis.
It's a good start to the list.
Yeah, very good.
Janis Joplin was born on January 19th, 1943, in Port Arthur, Texas. She began playing music in 1963 at the age of 20 in San Francisco, actually with future Jefferson Aeroplane guitarist Jorma Kaukonen. Nope. Hold on. I'm going to try again. Kaukonen.
Yep. I'd go with that.
That sounds fine. Sounds just
we'll
fine.
We'll cover Jefferson Aeroplane at some point, and I'll obviously correct myself because I botched it.
We do need to start like putting in the time to figure out enunciations, but we just haven't.
I did for one.
Yeah, it's fine. That's kind of fun. This is the best way to get emails is to just say things wrong and people will correct us.
That's really the long game here.
So it was around this time that she also began drinking heavily. Her favorite drink was actually SoCo, and using drugs, primarily psychedelics like LSD and mushrooms, as well as just a taste of methamphetamine. And as time went on, heroin.
These people just never know when to draw the line. You got to figure out. You can't do the good ones. You can't.
Oh, man.
I also live a very different life from you and I, so I just don't know if I can comment on it.
Cannot.
I don't know if I can really comprehend.
You just got to get out of your own head sometimes, and I guess meth and heroin are the way to do it. Do the downers, do the uppers, and
you need to try them all.
Then you're just back where you started, I guess. I don't know.
It's called getting even.
So Janis was in the there we go, yeah, ride that magic carpet at a smooth altitude. So Janis was in the process of recording her third studio album when she failed to show up to recording. She was staying at the Landmark Motor Hotel in Los Angeles, so Paul Rothchild, the producer for the album, called the hotel to see if they could check on her. They sent her guitarist, John Cook, to go up to her room, and when he got there, he found her in her hotel room beside her bed, dead. She had shot up some heroin late the night before and actually wandered around the hotel for a while, including talking to a hotel attendant and asking them for some change to buy some cigarettes. She then went back to her hotel room where she overdosed. She was actually in the process of overdosing while she was wandering around, but she didn't know it. A lot of times, what happens when you overdose is you'll just immediately like crumple to the ground and fall and basically die right there, or unless you can be revived. But like with a variety of drugs in your system, sometimes the overdose takes some time. So you can kind of be a walking dead person, essentially. Pretty messed up.
It's somber is the theme of the episode.
That's right. This is a dark one. So at age 27 years and 258 days old, Janis Joplin died of a heroin overdose. She was found late in the afternoon, and the police found needles, heroin, weed, and booze in her room. When Cook found her, she had already been gone for approximately 12 hours. She was cremated, and her ashes were spread over the Pacific Ocean from a plane. And there's actually a conspiracy that says she did not die from an overdose, but rather from an unfortunate accident. But I think I'm going to save that for when we fully cover her for now. And for now, that's the abbreviated version of the life and death of singer Janis Joplin.
Man, highly abbreviated, but...
And it's a rough one.
Yeah, it's all rough. Yeah. These are all going to be rough. But like we said it last episode, we're going to just cover strictly the death of these people, because these are all people we plan on covering in depth at some point. These are just kind of some fun sodes for us. Not fun, you know? Definitely not fun. but just a departure for now.
Yes, absolutely. There's one person that we are not going to cover in depth. Maybe a couple, but there's one that I know we're not going to cover because they're not really a singer. They're more of an actor. But we'll get into that at the end of the episode.
Yeah, you did that. You did that to us.
Oh, I did that to myself. I enjoy it.
I love it, though. I fully support the decision.
Thank you.
So I'm going to keep the momentum going with another woman that everyone who was also 13 when Frank came out will well know.
They're trying to make me go to rehab. And I said,
no, no, no.
I'm of course talking about Amy Winehouse. Amy was a six-time Grammy Award-winning artist, and not only did she have six Grammys, but she held two Guinness Book of World Records, which I'm sure have since been broken, but most Grammy Awards won by a British female act, and most songs by a woman to simultaneously appear on the UK singles chart, eight of them at one time.
Incredibly successful.
Pretty impressive. So something to keep in mind here is that Amy broke out in 2003. Her debut album, Frank, was hugely successful and was followed up by Back to Black, which was equally successful. And like we've said countless times again, once your sophomore album's a hit, you are golden. So, yeah, unfortunately, as is the case with a lot of artists that are launched into stardom at a young age, Amy had a lot of struggles with substance abuse and self-harm. And in another parallel that we've seen several times, a lot of this was really ramped up by her nerves. She basically started drinking and using to calm herself before performing.
So do you
and
know
this just kind of snowballed?
Do you know if she was using drugs before she kind of became famous, or was it all because of her fame?
I know they made it sound like alcohol was super ramped up when she started performing, but I'm not really sure about the drugs beforehand.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. We'll figure it out when we cover her for real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In 2007, a string of shows had to be canceled due to a reported overdose of heroin, ecstasy, cocaine, ketamine, and alcohol.
Why?
Quite a mixture.
Like just throwing ketamine in there.
Trying to get even, man. We already said it.
It's like, if, for those of you who have played Breath of the Wild, it's like when you just throw random shit into the frying pan and it makes like the doobiest food.
Works.
Yeah. It makes like the food that's censored out. Yeah, like are you going for
It's
here?
Almost exactly like that is the thing. Yeah. So yeah, keep that in mind. And if you don't know what we're talking about, go play Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Incredible
know
game.
Exactly what's happening here.
Incredible game that's like 5 years old at this point.
So around 2008, Amy's father had stated in a press conference that the singer was developing emphysema brought on from, and this is a quote, chain smoking crack cocaine, which was a problem at one point in her life.
I don't know how much I'm allowed to laugh
at
all.
Do they sell those in packs?
No, I know. It's
it's tough. Yeah.
Is that like a two-pack a day type thing? Or what do you, how do you quantify
no, it's
that?
It's... I don't exactly know, but apparently her lungs were working at about 70%, which is awful,
you need
especially as a singer.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So the one positive side to this is that she did actually check herself into a two-week inpatient recovery program. Mm. And according to her physician, she actually did stay away from drugs after 2008. And that was kind of replaced by alcohol was the problem there. So the next few years of her life were spent in a cycle of binge drinking, then quitting, then you know, eventually relapsing. And she was struggling with bulimia at the same time and was being urged by doctors to not only get help for her addictions, but to get psychiatric treatment. And she, this is pretty sad, kept turning it down because she was scared that it would stifle her creativity or her music career.
Oh, Jesus.
So, yeah, that's upsetting.
Yeah.
You know, and tragically, on July 23rd, 2011, this cycle claimed her life. According to Amy's general physician, Dr. Christian Rimet, she stated that Amy had gone 3 weeks without drinking, and then the night before her death, she actually told Romette that she had started drinking again because she was bored. I don't know if that was in some kind of checkup or what, but that's what she stated, the doctor, I mean. Mm-hmm. And so Amy's live-in bodyguard, Andrew Morris, he said that he saw her in her room at 2 a.m. She was watching TV, laughing. Things were like normal. And he came in at 10 the following morning to see what she was doing, and she was still in bed, so he just left. He said it was pretty common for her to sleep pretty late in the day. So he came back at 3 p.m. when he still hadn't heard anything and realized she was in the exact same position she had been hours before that. So he tried to find a pulse and could not. And then they found three empty vodka bottles by her bed, and the toxicology report report came back and it was discovered that the amount in her bloodstream was 5 times the legal driving limit.
Oh, man.
The cause of death was ruled death by misadventure, which is basically a British thing for an accident by willful act. Yeah.
Yeah. There is another person on this list who died from death by misadventure.
Yes, there is.
Yeah, 5 times would be about 0.35 blood alcohol level, which is insane. It's
extremely high. And that's the other thing with, because she was still struggling with bulimia and everything. So she was already really weak. And so just all of this on top of it kind of.
Yeah. Do you know when she died? Like, do you know if she was already dead at when he checked her at like 10 a.m.?
Well, he said he came back at 3 and she was in the exact same position. So I would assume if not, she was at least unconscious at
basically
that point.
Basically gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nuts. God.
Yep.
Boy, pretty this episode rough. Is dark.
Alright, here we go.
Nope. Cheers, God. Everyone. Next good thing one. We're all drinking to all these people who died from drinking.
R.A. freaking P.
Oh, man.
They're trying to make me go to rehab.
Oh, I said no.
She was so good.
Well, and it sucks, too, like, because she refused to go get help because it didn't want to. She didn't want to like hurt her creativity, but like it killed her. You know what I mean?
It
hurt it in the most ultimate way, which is her dying. But I mean,
we make a lot of jokes. We don't really say this, but if you're struggling, it's okay to get someone. Some help.
Oh yeah. Anywhere you're at is better than being dead. So if you have to leave whatever situation you're in, it's better than, you know,
whatever you think you might be losing, you could lose a lot more.
Way more. I do have to wonder though, and this is just me speaking off the top of my head, I wonder like if these people didn't die at this age or even at a young age, like would they just kind of fade into obscurity? And you know,
I think that's a big question. That's kind of like the you know, the Dark Knight thing. You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become a villain. Would you have the same career? That's
a
weird question.
Do you die when you're at the peak of your career and you kind of become immortalized for it, you know?
And that's what has happened to all these people, pretty much.
Why we're talking about them.
That's right.
Yeah.
Pretty all nuts. Right. Now, Ethan, who do you got, man?
Let's keep it sad, man.
Let's keep it sad. Let's keep the energy. Let's keep it low. All right. This might be my personal favorite between, I don't know, it's a tough decision, but I picked Alan Wilson of Canned Heat. He was born July 4th, 1943 in Arlington, Massachusetts. Wilson started playing music fairly young.
Independence Day.
Yes,
sorry.
Yes,
in Arlington, man. He's a real patriot.
Yeah, American through and through.
He started in a jazz band with his schoolmates when he was pretty young, in his teen years. He's very different from the bluesy music that he would write while he's in the Canned Heat, but he had a change in musical direction when he heard the music of Muddy Waters.
Seems Muddy Waters, classic. It gets everyone
Gut-wrenching
going, man.
Blues.
Yep.
Yeah.
Some would say maybe the king of blues.
Some might.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah. After high school, he attended Boston University and majored in music. He was playing in coffee houses around Cambridge a lot at this time as well. He was writing music articles for Broadside of Boston and Little Sandy Review, reviewing blues musicians. Like, he was going back and digging up these super old blues musicians, like Delta blues musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his biggest influences was Skip James, who was fairly popular at the same time as Robert Johnson.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that name sounded familiar. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. So he pretty much emulated Skip James's vocal delivery with the high pitch. It's really high pitched vocal delivery. I think it's like a tenor range.
Ooh.
Yeah. So Alan went so far into the blues that he learned all of Son House's, who Son House was also friends with Robert Johnson. He was also a Delta blues musician too. He learned all of Son House's songs and guitar. And so Son House stopped playing music in the 40s because he just didn't get popular and he gave it up. But there was this huge blues folk revival in the 60s, and Alan reminded Son House how to play his own songs in 1964.
Jesus.
Like, sat down with him and showed him how to play his songs because he had listened to him that much. A 19-year-old blues kid in Boston reminding Son House, who was 62 at the time, how to play his songs. It's freaking crazy.
You gotta remind me, son. Like, I don't remember.
It had been like 20-plus years. He hadn't played his songs because he... It, like. the only reason these Delta blues musicians got popular is because of the folk blues revival in the 60s. Like, that's the only reason.
You're absolutely correct.
So while performing in Cambridge, Alan met John Fahey, a guitarist. Fahey convinced Alan to move to Los Angeles to help Fahey with his master's degree thesis because Alan knew so much about blues music and he was also pursuing a master's degree in music.
Mm-hmm.
So here they met Bob Height and would end up being a co-lead vocalist in Canned Heat. They had two singers, and you can tell if you listen to their music because Alan isn't singing all the time. The band officially formed in 1965. Wilson only performed two concerts with this band, one at the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967 and the other at Woodstock in 1969. So that was it. And then Alan sang on their two biggest songs, Going Up the Country.
That's a big one, though. Woodstock, 69, that's a big one to perform
that's
at.
Like, and actually, their performance wasn't on the Woodstock movie release that they put out for this. They actually didn't put the Canned Heat performance until the 25 re-release of Woodstock 1969.
Do you know why?
I don't know. And
weird.
I think I was reading that Going Up the Country, they didn't even use the live performance. They just put the studio track over the performance for some reason.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, that's very weird.
On the Road Again was my MySpace song when I had MySpace. I really like Canned Heat. They're just really good.
Wait, are you saying that the popular Willie Nelson song On the Road Again is a Canned Heat song?
No, they're very different songs. Oh. So On the Road is I'm on the road again. I'm on the road again.
Oh.
That's a very different song. From
I don't think I have, again. But I
as,
like it.
As opposed to the Willie Nelson version, which is on the road again.
I just can't wait to be on the road again.
Yeah, very different.
Playing but, music with my friends.
I just can't wait to get on the road again.
What is that? Bob Nelson? Bob, it's just Bob Dylan and Willie Nelson. Yeah. Together.
It's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Pretty good, right?
Willie Dylan?
Willie Dylan.
Unfortunately, Alan really never got to see any of the success that Canned Heat got because on September 3rd, 1970, Alan Wilson was found on the hillside of the Topanga Canyon near Bob Height's home. His death was attributed to accidental barbiturate overdose.
Which is going to come again and again in this.
Phenobarbital, man. It gets everyone. Alan had reportedly attempted suicide a few months before by driving his car off a freeway in Los Angeles. He was hospitalized after his suicide attempt. His death has never been ruled as a suicide because of a lack of a note.
Huh.
And his death was actually 2 weeks before the death of Jimi Hendrix and 4 weeks before the death of Janis Joplin.
Wow. Yeah, man, the 70s were a hot time for celebrity deaths, especially like, these ones.
In late 60s,
it's crazy because so many people this had happened to, but that it doesn't really become like a public or cultural or media phenomenon until a certain other person we'll talk about later dies, that it really becomes known by people in general.
Right.
Yep.
Arguably the biggest person on this list that dies from it.
Yeah, that I took very selfishly without really meaning to.
Hey, man, nobody could cover this guy like you.
I don't know. So, we'll see.
I got to choose some really deep cuts.
I'm throwing you some bones.
Yeah, you made sure.
I took one non-deep cut, but I got some fun ones for him.
Oh man, yeah, you made sure to get the big ones in there.
Yeah, I just
Austin.
Went with the ones
we
I recognized
it.
Really fast, and it just happened to be like the three biggest.
The biggest, yeah. Really convenient. Yeah. It's fine.
I only knew I wanted Amy for sure, but
somehow you just, I sent you the list of the 27 clubs so you could look at them, and Austin's just like, I'll take these three. The biggest ones. Like,
he like went to their Spotify list. He's like, yeah, these all have like 50 million plus on each song.
No.
I need it to be known that I gave them fair chance to take them from me, but I actually also know that that's a weird offer.
No, it was a hollow offer. I know it was
I
hollow.
Intentionally wanted to go last so I could challenge myself because I wanted to find some real interesting things.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
So do you...
love you, boys.
Ethan, do you think that Alan Wilson killed himself intentionally?
Yeah, I legitimately think he killed himself.
Yeah.
Sad.
That's nuts. I suppose... It's hard to say that you killed yourself with a drug overdose, though, because, like, you can't really control a drug overdose. I mean, you can, obviously. You could just load yourself up with drugs, but, like, it's not like shooting yourself or hanging yourself or something. You know what I mean?
I think that's why Death by Misadventure makes so much sense. I had never heard that before now.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that the guy I'm literally about to cover is also from Death by Misadventure, because it's not, it doesn't seem like a suicide attempt, quote unquote suicide attempt. But, like, so let's get into that guy. I'll be covering Rolling Stones founding member Brian Jones. And I feel like it's important to state up top that I hate the Rolling Stones.
Yes. All right. I said it.
Let me quote you here, 20. You not say,
it's fine,
I don't care for the Doors, but I hate the Rolling Stones?
What I should have said is, I don't care for the Doors, but I fucking hate the Rolling Stones.
Somehow this quote from Tony that was just said word for word translated in Ethan's brain to Austin and Tony both hate the Doors.
Yeah.
I don't know,
if you if you listen to part one or two on My Chemical Romance, maybe it's three.
I can't remember, but Ethan says, you guys don't like the Doors, so you wouldn't know.
Yeah. And what I said, I don't care about the
Doors. I really like the fucking Doors. I've got vinyls in here in this house.
I just don't care about, like, I'm not going to actively seek them out, but I, you know, like, Riders on the Storm's a great song. I don't give a shit. Whatever. You know?
Yeah, but you're indifferent, so we both hate them.
Exactly. Yeah. Somehow
you together. You're a group.
But I hate the Rolling Stones. I think they are the most overrated band that has ever plagued this earth. I am excited to cover them in depth, because I'm hoping that me covering them in depth and learning their history will change my mind. But for now, I'll leave it there, and I will focus on the person who I think is the best member of the band, Brian Jones. So Lewis Brian Hopkins Jones was born on February 28th, 1942 in Cheltenham, Gloucestershire, which is in England. It's very
I think you did
fun
fine.
Name. Thank you.
We'll see.
Thank you. I can't wait till I'm like, we're 6 years into this podcast and I can just say any name perfectly, because we've gotten corrected on every name in the world.
You'll have learned.
Be great. We've already been there. That's the thing.
Yeah, I can't wait to do some Norwegian bands. We already said Norwegian bands, I think, in the last episode, but I can't wait to be like, oh, Hoofden Skathafire, and just nail it. It's going to be great.
I think we can't put that in.
Oh, we can. I can say something.
It's a broad generalization. It's not like he said they all eat rotten fish.
Norwegian.
Okay. Lutefisk?
Yeah, it's the gross fish.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That's just a fact.
Okay, that one's a fact for some reason.
It's a fact. Okay. It's a fact.
So Brian loved music from a young age. He listened to classical and blues primarily, including two guys we've already talked about, Muddy Waters and Robert Johnson, who's another member of the club Brian himself would unknowingly join.
The first.
He was not the first, actually. He was like the third or fourth. The first guy was in like late 1800s.
Yeah. Well, I traced it back to the composer.
He's the first, like, really popular, quote unquote popular. Yeah. Yeah. So Brian moved to London at the age of 21 to play music full time. After playing in a few bands, he put out an advertisement for a new R&B band, and Ian Stewart, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards all answered the call, and they would become the Rolling Stones. They actually were not the Rolling Stones at first. They were the Rolling Stones with no G at the end. Yeah, I guess. Fucking hate the Rolling Stones.
Tony couldn't fucking care less.
I'd just get me through this damn script.
I only did Brian Jones so that it was done. It just had to be done. Nobody else took him. So in the band, Brian played all types of instruments, but this is why I think he's the best member of the band, including the slide guitar, drums, guitar, harmonica, bass, piano, the sitar, organ, marimba, saxophone, and the auto harp, as well as many more. Like, if you listen to a lot of their songs, the instrument that you're like, oh, that's kind of a fun instrument that shouldn't be in there, that's all Brian Jones.
That's him doing
it. He was a musical prodigy, and he helped the band get off the ground. But unfortunately, as the band got bigger, Jones was being phased out. He was taking credit for a lot of the writing for the band's stuff, and he was being paid more for it. The band's new manager, Andrew Oldham, was taking notice and had an issue with that. He didn't see Jones as the star of the band, so he shouldn't be paid more. He actually saw Mick Jagger's flamboyant style as kind of the leader of the band, so he thought that Mick Jagger should be paid
more. Star quality.
Which it does make sense, but like if you know, just because Mick Jagger's the face of the band, the backbone is equally as important.
Yeah, you don't get rid of like seven vertebrae when you get a facelift.
Exactly, man. Yeah, it does not matter.
Make a clothing line or something. Don't take from the real artist.
Yeah, it's real frustrating. I hate the Rolling Stones.
Oh man, you'll get through this. You'll get through this.
All of this would cause a rift in the band, and though it would take 7 years before he would be officially kicked out, things were not good for Brian and the rest of the band. He was actually traveling like on his own. He would get his own tour bus, and he would stay in different hotels. Like, he was doing all of that, and he was arrested a few times for drug possession, which only raised the tensions amongst the members, which is funny because they were all doing a ton of drugs at the time.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
It does not make any sense.
Yeah, a bit of the pot in the kettle.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, but I guess the three people who didn't get caught, or four people or whatever that didn't get caught, can obviously rag on the one person who did get caught.
That's how it
doesn't
goes,
make any sense, but it's a dumb band. So,
on
June 9th, 1969, he announced that he was leaving the band. And it came out later that the band actually asked him to leave, but let him choose how he wanted to announce it. So he said that he was leaving the band under his own free will. But
that's nice of them.
Yeah, I suppose.
You're not dumping me. You're not dumping me. I'm dumping you.
I suppose. You could just tell everyone that you dumped me. Just a few weeks later, early in the morning on July 3rd, Brian decided to go for a swim in his pool. And while he was swimming, he drowned and sank to the bottom. He was discovered by his girlfriend sometime later, who said he actually still had a pulse when he was pulled out of the pool. But when medics arrived, Brian was pronounced dead at the age of 27 years, 125 days of an accidental drowning. And on the coroner's report, they listed the death as, quote, death by misadventure. Which, Austin, what does that mean again?
It's an accident by a willful act. So, you know, like you do a bunch of drugs and you don't plan on dying, but it leads to you.
Then you do.
Dying,
or you go like swimming and you don't plan on dying, and then you do.
But then you die.
Freaking go figure. So he was buried in Cheltenham Cemetery and was supposedly actually buried 10 feet deep to try and prevent grave robbing, because he was the founding member of top five biggest bands in the history of time.
Yep.
And of course,
one of the top five biggest and top five best, maybe even top one best of all time.
Probably number one.
You're not going to get me. You're not going to get me going on this stupid band.
No, I don't even agree with that statement.
I don't either. Don't worry.
God. So, of course, there is a conspiracy that goes with this, too, saying that Jones was actually murdered by Frank Thorogood, who is a contractor doing work on Brian's property, and killed him over money, which I think is funny because the dead don't pay.
Yeah.
But then it was actually covered up by police because they did such a bad job of originally investigating his death. And while the case was actually reopened in August 2009, they again came to the conclusion that Jones died from a misadventure. And that's the story of Brian Jones. It wasn't the most interesting death on the list, but Brian was an incredible musician who should have done many, many more great things. He could have had probably another, like, huge band if he could have stayed alive. Like, he would have had such a big one. And his girlfriend said that to go along with this, and we'll get into it more when we cover the Rolling Stones fully, but his girlfriend said, like, he's a great swimmer. He wasn't drinking or anything like that, so I don't know why he drowned, which leads, you know, I built on the conspiracy, that he was murdered, but he probably just drowned.
What if she made a settlement with the contractor?
Oh, God, here we go.
You'd never know.
I guess.
This is weird, the misadventure thing, because there's obviously no substance that we know of involved, but then that would just mean I went swimming and didn't plan on dying, but then I did.
I mean, that's
truthfully. I have a pool, I swim all the time, and somehow I
don't. Truthfully, anything besides, like, putting a gun in your mouth and pulling the trigger, it would count as a death by misadventure. Because it's like, yeah, I wasn't planning on having a heart attack today, but how about it? I did.
I think it's like when you're doing something
that could cause
outside
death.
The, like yeah. an activity, yeah. you know, outside the, yeah. I don't know how to explain it, but you get it.
I'm driving really fast.
I'm being a little facetious, you know.
Maybe a little factitious son of a bee. I know it's not said like that. Okay, so my next selection.
Who you got? Who do you got?
Is, oh, who do I got?
Who you got?
Let me tell you, I got one of the smaller artists
sure
from this from this batch of people. Absolute pioneer, Jimi Hendrix, known as one of the most influential guitarists, instrumentalists of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Very small one on this list. Like I said, I picked modestly. Jimmy paved the way for modern rock and roll with not only his unmistakable playing style, but the way he used effects and pedals and high gain and volume. And he was one of the first people to really utilize the feedback coming from an amp, you know, and in part of your sound.
Yeah, man.
Which is big now.
You know what really affected his sound as well? He used a right-handed guitar. But played it left-handed.
Yep.
He played it upside down. And the pickups, the way they're set up, are meant to pick up the low end with the top of the pickup. So he was getting really soft tones on his big strings and really high tones on his smaller high strings.
See, I knew he did that, but I didn't know the
science. It really affected
science.
His sound because he literally always played it that way.
And to go off of what Ethan said, he did not like... He didn't restring the guitar. He just, the top,
yep.
the
flipped
high
it
E,
it.
Yeah, was the top
it,
string for
left-handed.
Him, which is nuts.
Oh, so cool.
That's crazy.
Very cool, actually. An underlying theme, obviously, of this entire episode is drugs and alcohol, mm-hmm. and this would ultimately lead to Hendrix joining the 27 Club on September 18th, 1970. Hendrix's music is widely known for its psychedelic nature. Jimmy was really big into LSD and was always trying to personify the experiences he had while on the drug through his music, which I think
pretty
he does a
job,
pretty good job of.
Yeah,
honestly.
Listen to Are You Experienced? It's just the weirdest thing, but it's so cool.
Don't really know what's happening, but you know it's good and it's right.
But it's right.
So. It's so right. While excessive use of psychedelics can have major impact on one's psyche, it's not the direct cause of his death. That would ultimately go to a combination of alcohol and barbiturates.
Ooh. See, and this is why the FDA phased out barbiturates and replaced it with the much safer benzos. Like,
yeah, and those are absolutely safe. And
Xanax.
Not, yeah,
They're
no
totally
problems
safe.
There. Yep.
Huh. So, okay, so again, if you've listened to us in the past, you know I'm very naive when it comes to drugs and anything like that. So are barbiturates essentially like the
their own drug group?
Oh, right.
They're,
but are
they
like
mostly
prescription
for like insomnia
okay.
and
yeah,
stuff like that? Yeah.
I didn't know if it was if it was like heroin where it was somebody cooked it up in some shady ass lab. Okay, cool.
It's a pill.
Cool.
Man,
not cool.
Ethan
I mean,
and I let the whole podcast sound like we didn't know anything about drugs for a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, we were idiots.
Turns out we know maybe too much, but whatever. So the details surrounding Hendrix's death came exclusively from German figure skater and painter Monika Denneman.
Mm.
Jimmy had spent several days with Denneman at her apartment in London.
Doing what?
And, you know, we don't know. We just know
just
he
crazy.
Was there. And he was in a relationship with a different person at the time.
Watercolors.
So I'm sure they were just hanging out. I'm sure they were just
watercolors. They were doing watercolors.
Yeah. Dropping acid.
Yep. And so the night before he died, Denneman stated that she prepared them dinner for two around 11 p.m., which is pretty late dinner.
Very late. Yeah.
I've eaten twice by then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They shared a bottle of wine.
Oh,
and
that's nice.
Don't worry. That was not the cause. But then she took Hendrix to a party at a friend's place around 1:45 in the morning, and she claimed she picked him up about an hour later, took him back to their place where they stayed up talking till 7 that morning, and then passed out. It was later revealed that he had taken an amphetamine at the party, a black bomber, another one of those pill names that's probably just a little too fun.
I decided to look it up.
Good name.
Amphetamine sulfate. And it was pretty popular, right up there with the Dexys, which we talked about last episode.
Yeah, we did talk about this. Yep.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Yep. Dexedrine.
So it seems a little strange that he would take an amphetamine around 2 and then somehow be able to fall asleep 5 hours later. That will come into play here in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what do you got for us, Thomas?
It's heating up. So Dannemann, she reported that she woke up at around 11 and found Jimmy unconscious and unresponsive, but he was still breathing, even though just barely. So she called an ambulance. It arrived at 11:27, and she had called at 11:18, according to her claim.
Wow.
Which I guess would be true. I don't know. But unfortunately, he was declared dead at 12:45 the same day.
Oof.
The official cause of death was asphyxiation, as he ended up choking on his own vomit, which is just a terrible way to go. It's really fucking sad. The toxicology report came on to reveal later that Hendrix had an extremely high concentration of barbiturates in his bloodstream. Whether it was fear of persecution or whether she didn't know at the time and found out later, I don't know. But Monica Dannemann would go on to report that Jimmy had taken 9 of her Vesperex, which is a powerful prescription sleep aid.
Wow.
And so he had 18 times the recommended dosage in his blood. And this has also drawn up some conspiracies. I could see Ethan's hand in the air. He's waiting to say something. I was just going to say we could freestyle a little bit here for a second, because there are theories on Monica.
It so ties into, like, there were so many counterculture icons at this time that died. Like, it was like back to back. They were just dropping like flies. And obviously, you know, they all were doing drugs a lot. But a lot of people do speculate.
I swear to God, if you say this was some governmental
they speculate
not what I
some
was
people
get at it
speculate
all.
That maybe the CIA
god.
Was knocking them off.
Damn it.
Oh my god.
Dwayne Allman, John Lennon, Mama Cass, Joplin, Morris, Odin Redding. There's a list. I got the list.
Did John Lennon die in 1980?
I don't know.
Oh my god, dude.
I didn't even have a date on
that one. you just took it.
I was just taking it and went with it. But
no,
the ones I do have there.
I
it was
knew
like
it.
Early 70s. That was
I should have seen
it.
That coming, to be honest. The conspiracy I was getting at is that maybe there was ulterior motives from Dannemann, because they earlier in that night, before the party, they were at another friend's house, and apparently she was really jealous about some attention Hendrix was giving to another lady, and they got in a really apparent fight, like in front of everyone, kind of disappeared, and then he came to this party early in the morning, showed up without her, and then all of a sudden, about an hour later, she was at the party, like ringing the buzzer, freaking out. And he, like, went down to talk to her eventually and just left. And then this whole thing happened. So there are some speculations
that
people
is a
think
logical
foul play
perspective.
Might be there.
That is a very logical perspective.
Yeah.
But
so you can dig into that yourselves.
Okay.
I'm just going to give the facts, but.
So let me kind of break down his last night, I guess. So he took.
Okay.
He took barbiturates. Which are downers, and then he took amphetamines, which are
other
up.
Way around. He took the amphetamine at about 2 in the morning,
first.
Which is way up.
That's an upper. That's an upper. Yep. And then he took the barbiturates, which are downers, and then he took the sleeping medication, which are obviously also downers. And
the barbiturates are the sleeping meds.
Really
the
showing
Vesperex
my
or whatever it was.
Okay,
that's
too many names.
That's another thing. She eventually, the story seems to kind of change. And eventually she said that around 6 in the morning, he was asking for sleep aids because he couldn't sleep. And she was not giving him any and eventually took one herself. And he must have noticed and taken them.
Of course.
So,
of course.
Yeah. So who knows, man?
Why would you ever have a consistent story?
Well,
who knows?
I mean, because the 1970s were pretty, well, I mean, obviously, you know, like, a lot of stuff was going on in the world in the 1970s. So, like, the government...
Free love and drugs, baby.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. And so I'm sure that the government, like, I'm sure that the police were just like, yeah, he died on his own vomit, and that's the end of the story, like, blah, blah, blah. So I'm sure nobody would ever hard look into it and, like, really
no.
put...
No, Scotland Yard got involved.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yeah. There was a whole investigation, but it ended up coming back as just... asphyxiation on his own vomit. There was nothing proven.
That's what I'm saying. I'm sure that they didn't like hold Monica's feet to the fire and be like, so your story seems to be changing here. Like, yeah. Why? You know, I'm sure they were just like, well, she said that he took her medication. And so probably.
I'll have to double check, but I'm pretty sure there was two invests. I think it resurfaced again at one point.
Hmm. All right, get in there, big boy.
If you haven't heard of The Doors, I'd be very surprised. Their music alone has been heavily influential on so many musicians except for Tony. James Douglas Morrison was born to Clara, Virginia. I'm sorry. James Douglas Morrison was born to Clara, Virginia, and George Stephen Morrison on December 8, 1943. His father would go on to be a two-star admiral in the Navy. Like, he was a... huge Navy figure. His dad literally commanded the Navy during the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which threw the United States into the pretty pointless and daunting Vietnam War.
Absolutely.
Like, we shouldn't have been there.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
true. Yeah. That I'll agree with.
That is a whole nother rabbit hole that we will never talk about because we are not a war history podcast.
Man,
but I will say that this was probably a false flag and threw us into a war we didn't need to be in.
Ethan's main source for that is Wikipedia. We're not taking a stance on Gulf of Tonkin.
Come on, man.
Here.
After Ethan was talking about this before, we said, what's your source on this? And then he said, I'll find a better source.
I'll find a better one.
And then he looked it down history.com, and I typed in Gulf of Tonkin false flag, and nothing really comes up. So maybe it is, maybe it's not. We haven't done a lot of research.
We're not going to take a stance either way.
I'm just saying that that America has a history of taking events and turning them into wars.
That is absolutely true.
I just don't want to take a stance on what I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Morrison was a military brat as a kid. He moved all over, just like John Denver, whose father was an Air Force officer.
He was an Air Force pilot.
Yeah, well, officer is synonymous.
I didn't know. Sorry.
So,
yeah, Tony, what would you know?
Not that. That, I know that.
So, anyway, he spent some time in San Diego, Northern Virginia, Kingsville, Texas, Albuquerque, New Mexico, back to San Diego, Alameda, California, then finally back to Northern Virginia to graduate from Alexandria, Virginia.
How about this? Okay, I don't mean to interrupt. When we cover The Doors... we'll do plenty of research on Gulf of Tonkin, and we'll get back to you on whether...
we'll come back with a firm
stance. Yeah, we will
stance.
Come back whether we think with it a more false steady stance. Stance. I only read over some things today, and I always kind of knew that it was a very touchy war and reason.
I always
kind of
knew
type
for
war.
A fact it didn't happen. Everybody made it up.
Yep, who knew? Anyway, James was heavily influenced by Friedrich... is it Nietzsche?
Nietzsche.
Something. I looked it up earlier. I can't remember. And he's the man who said, if you gaze into the abyss will gaze back into you.
Yes.
And he wrote a lot of profound, like, mortality-type related stuff. He moved to Los Angeles after graduating from high school and attended UCLA. He got his bachelor's degree from the UCLA Film School.
Oh.
He lived a very different lifestyle while in L.A. after graduating. I'm sure he had a lot of money to lean on. Because of his father's position,
yeah.
He would sleep on the rooftop of one of his UCLA buddies' house a lot. And while he would sleep up there and live up there, he would write a lot of poetry and lyrics to songs that would turn into songs like Hello, I Love You and Moonlight Drive during this time while he was being graduated and not really doing anything.
That sounds awesome.
Thinking way ahead.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
He's just being a dude that has a nice little fun to lean on.
What is that like?
Yeah, I can't imagine
nice.
It's fun.
I like to imagine I could do that. According to Ray Manzarek, during this time, he thrived on canned beans and LSD. And obviously, he's
what
doing
a,
just fine now.
Yeah, what a freaking... that's a steady diet.
Yeah, that's a
balance.
Fiber. There's definitely fiber there. He actually met
Ray
Manzarek.
How does LSD have a lot of fiber in it? I wasn't aware.
He met Ray Manzarek at UCLA, who would end up being the keyboardist in The Doors. They then met Robbie Krieger, who would be the guitarist, and John Densmore, who was the drummer. They then formed the Doors. They never actually had a bassist. The Ray Manzarek would play bass notes on the keyboard instead.
That's kind of fun.
It's a nice little fun substitute.
Nice little, substitution.
Austin, your band never had a bassist. You didn't need one.
We were bad.
So good. I want to play bass with you guys.
Yeah, it's just a tight-knit group that said they didn't need a bassist because they didn't find anyone that was tight enough knit to be in a group with you, right? Isn't that the story that I read?
I forgot that was an actual post that was made by someone who was not me or anyone actually in the band.
Anyway. We'll leave it there.
So, a fun little fact about the Doors is, during this time, during the beginning of their formation, they were avid followers of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was an Indian guru who traveled to America and taught like a lot of, I think it was like Buddhist-based type stuff. And there's actually a city and university here right outside of Fairfield, Iowa. It's like a little commune with a university on it where they teach stuff relating to his teachings.
Yeah.
And it's all...
What is that community called?
The Vedic City?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, like that. I remember hearing that.
The Doors would release 6 albums in the 5 years that they were a band and were huge. I think they maybe played a dozen shows in the time that they were actually a band. But after finishing the recording for their last album, L.A. Woman, last album where Jim Morrison was alive for, in March of 1971, Jim Morrison went to live with Pamela Corson in Paris to take a break. Pamela had rented an apartment for him in Paris, so he made himself at home. On July 3rd, 1971, Jim Morrison was found dead in the bathtub by Pam. No autopsy was done, as it was not legally required by French law, and it was ruled as heart failure.
What?
Some claimed that he was using heroin at the time, but there was no autopsy, so we honestly don't really know what happened.
All right, I'm not going to say anything about the French, but what the fuck, man?
Yeah, come on.
Not waving a white flag, not offending the French.
Lubega.
His death actually occurred 2 years to the day of Brian Jones's death.
That's true.
And about 9 months after Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. He shared a producer, Paul Rothschild, with Joplin. Mm-hmm. And after Brian Jones died, Jim wrote a poem called Ode to L.A. while thinking of Brian Jones, deceased.
That's the whole title.
The name of this. Yeah,
that was the whole title.
Wow.
And someone actually put it out as a song in 2019. I didn't know who it was. So I didn't think it was important.
That's kind of cool, though.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in some person's take on it. Yeah. but it was a poem.
I'll put it on Instagram, but I don't care right now.
Dude, the amount of people, like we said, the amount of people who died. And so far, we've talked about we've talked about Amy Winehouse, who died way later. And Alan Morris,
2011.
Alan Wilson,
yeah, who died. I can't remember. I could just go through the script again.
A year before this,
yeah. But between 68 and 72 or 73, so many hugely popular people died.
Counter culture icons.
It's crazy. Yeah. So,
and I will say about Amy Winehouse, she's actually accredited as kind of the revival of the 27 Club as a concept. It kind of stopped being a thing, and then when she died, everyone was like, oh, the 27 Club strikes again.
Yeah. Yep. Kind of, brought it back to light. So were the Doors really popular while Jim Morrison was alive, or was it only after he died?
They didn't play a lot of shows, but they're huge. They were charting. They were almost essentially like studio musicians that were able to make a living off the radio.
Sure.
That's pretty wild.
That's nuts. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again,
it's a different world we live in now.
How effing much more could they have done if they would have lived? That's just the so unfortunate thing about this whole thing is they died so young. I'm 28, Ethan's 28, and Austin is 20.
I'm 27, but by the time this comes out, it'll be 28. I might just immortalize us.
God.
Why not, right?
Oh, my God.
Jesus.
I got a month.
Oh, my God.
And Austin is 29. So, And we've done very little with our lives, so it's crazy.
Yeah, almost nothing, seemingly.
How much these guys have done and...
So much.
They're already gone, man. It's nuts.
Yep.
It's nuts. And so with that, we're going to get to the final entry on my list, and I'm going to go a little bit off script with what we're all about. First,
this is the saddest thing I've heard in the past few years.
So bad.
Remember when it happened? Yeah. Just, you don't believe it.
This
it's
one's
kind
rough.
Of a wild, wild fucking story.
This one is rough, and this guy is the most unmusician person we're going to talk about the entire time we do this.
Though.
He was a musician technically, yeah, but he didn't. He didn't do a lot for music or in music, not like all the other people on this list. But he's a man that's dear to my heart, Mr. Anton Yelchin. I got to do a guy who shares a name with me. So you know,
and that's totally fine because God damn, I've loved every movie he's been in pretty much.
Such a good actor. So
he was so good.
Like we said, he did play guitar for a band called The Hammerheads, and he did a little acoustic guitar playing. You can go find his stuff on Spotify. It's just him in acoustic guitar singing. But he was primarily known as an actor, most notably playing Pavel Chekhov in the Star Trek films, as well as many other like large roles. He was
the main one of the main roles in Alpha Dog. He's the kid that ends up getting killed. He's in one of my favorite movies of the past few years and probably all time now is Green Room, where he's in a punk band that plays at a Nazi function and ends up seeing some shit they shouldn't. And just watch the movie.
Go watch the movie.
But it's really, really fucking good. A24, Green Room. Go watch it. It's on Netflix.
Go check it out. I've not seen it. I'm definitely going to watch it. I'm very excited for that. Yeah, so like we said, not a musician, but, you know, I can't miss an opportunity to pay a little homage to someone who shares my fairly unique name, which my name is German, which is funny because Anton Viktorovich Yelchin was born on March 11th, 1989 in Leningrad.
Just Russian as can be.
Just very Russian, yeah. He was born in Leningrad, Soviet Union, 2 years before the USSR fell to become Russia and 14 other countries. Anton's parents were Jewish figure skaters. They were actually figure skaters who were Jewish. It's not like their race and religion mattered to their to their profession, but that's fine.
Perfect amount of explanation.
Good. Thank you so much. And they were actually so good that they qualified for the Olympics in 1972, but were forbidden to go under Stalin's rule. When Anton was 6 months old, his parents fled the country to come to America, where his parents became figure skating coaches, actually coaching Sasha Cohen, the silver medalist for the 2006 Winter Olympics, and not in any way related to Sasha
Michael
Baron
Cohen.
That's what I was wondering. I was like, oh, Borat was a figure skater.
Yes. I don't think also that she's related to Michael Cohen, the Trump lawyer.
Who's just a total scum. He's out of jail now. He's doing fine.
Good
oh, is he
out of jail?
Yeah, because of the coronavirus. They just let him out.
Just let him go. Get out of here.
Get out of here, buddy.
How about it? Man, everyone's saying this is bringing down the Trump presidency, but it seems like everyone
seems bolstered, honestly.
Seems like a lot.
How about that? We won't get into it. We're not a current news podcast.
No,
we don't know shit about shit. So let's just keep moving with what we wrote. So while his parents were coaching, Anton had aspirations to become an actor and got his chance when he was 11 years old. While his early jobs were nothing special, he managed to get parts in movies alongside Morgan Freeman in Along Comes a Spider and Anthony Hopkins in, I cannot remember the name of it, but it's another big role, when he was 12 years old. So just a year after he started, he got these roles, which is really big. And it only went up from there, eventually getting a spot, like I said, in the Star Trek films and Terminator Salvation in 2009.
Yep.
And
Kyle Reese.
Kyle Reese, baby.
You guys ever seen that clip of Christian Bale just freaking out on the set?
Oh, yeah.
Are you a professional? Are you a professional?
Hey, so man. Funny. He gets into it. He gets into his roles, all right?
Really method does. Acting.
Leave him alone.
He's stable.
Very
I love
stable.
Christian Bale. I'm not dissing him.
I mean, I
funny.
Do too, yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
Sorry that he yelled at a fucking temp.
Temp shouldn't have been, standing
it's a light
there?
Guy.
I don't know what he did. Nothing, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think
his career's
dragon.
Over, I'm sure.
Oh, God. Didn't he like a it doesn't matter. Okay. And he also lent his voice to the Smurfs and Troll Hunters. The Troll Hunters was actually released posthumously.
Yep.
unfortunately. So when he wasn't acting, he would play guitar in his free time, and you can actually find some videos of him singing and playing on the internet pretty easily, like I said. And when he sang alone, he actually preferred the blues, just like many other artists on this list. And he also formed a punk band called the Hammerheads in 2009 with Anton singing and playing rhythm guitar. It's pretty good. Typical like late 2000s punk, like it's just punk that obviously has the, like, it's punk that exists that after other types of, you know, pop and punk music existed, and grunge and all that. You can hear all the influences in it. Pretty good. You should go check it out. It's kind of fun. They recorded from 2009 to 2016, and the only reason they stopped recording or ended their time as a band was because of the reason we're doing this episode in the first place. Anton Yelchin died.
God, what a fucking Final Destination ass death this is.
This is bad.
This is the freakiest freak accident that could happen. So, early June 19th, 2016, Anton was driving his 2015 Jeep Grand Cherokee when he jumped out to make sure the gate at his Studio City home was locked properly. Now, whether he put the car in park or accidentally left it in neutral is up for debate, which I will explain why in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But when he jumped out to check his gate, the car began to roll backwards, and at approximately 1:10 a.m., it crushed him between it and a stone pillar and security fence. The car pushed on him for about a minute, or it pushed on him for much longer, but he was alive for about a minute until he finally died from blunt traumatic asphyxia, which is where deoxygenated blood is forced back up the vena cava through the neck and into the brain.
Oh my God.
Deoxygenated blood does nothing for your brain, as it's obviously deoxygenated. And the fact that you can't take any more oxygen because you're being crushed means that no more oxygen is getting into your system. You'll eventually pass out from asphyxiation. And if left unattended, you'll die, which is what happened to Anton. And he was already dead when his friends came to find him while he was still pinned. He was
actually lucky him, because from what I remember hearing, they didn't find him till the next day, like later in the day. It's good for him. It only took a minute, because he could have been stuck there for so long before he finally died.
Well, he was stuck there. It's just his body was stuck there. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. He could have just been there slowly suffocating. Suffering. If it hadn't let him,
he got in a position where he wasn't like slowly dying. Instead, it took like a minute.
Well, it sounds like it hit him hard enough. It crushed his chest completely. Right.
Yeah.
Instead of pinning him where it he could either move.
Yeah. He lived on a pretty steep like driveway. And so he stopped on the driveway to go check his gate, jumped out, the car's in neutral, probably picked up some speed. I mean, it probably hit him at like 10 miles an hour. And you know, when you get hit with 10 miles an hour and then get just immediately crushed between a stone pillar,
1,000 pounds.
Yeah. You're going to get it. Yeah. And then to have the blood just rush back up through the vena cava it's the vein that pulls, it's a vein or artery. One of them goes away from your heart. The other one goes towards your heart. I haven't taken biology in a long time.
Aorta is the artery. Vena cava is the vein, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
probably
correct.
I'm not going to pretend like I know.
Vein brings it back. Artery pumps it out.
So yeah, it's deoxygenated by the time it gets back through the vein. And yeah, it all got forced back up into his neck and head. And so it's pretty brutal. You can actually look up like images of patients of traumatic asphyxia if you're feeling brave, but like I have to warn you, it's
I don't know why you'd want to.
Oh my God. Like
you can.
The upper chest and neck and head is just red from all the blood that gets forced back up into your head. Your eyeballs start to get super red. Like it's really, really brutal stuff. Like it's like Austin said, it's really lucky, or like Austin and Ethan said, it's really lucky he only suffered for about a minute, but I have to imagine that minute was like
agony.
Agonizing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh God, it would have been terrible if he died a slow death. So Anton was buried at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery in Los Angeles. And so to go back to that bit about like the car being in neutral or not, Jeep actually recalled the Grand Cherokee in April 2016, just a few months before he died, because it had a defect that sometimes caused the vehicle to jump out of park and go into neutral. I wouldn't say that it would go into neutral, but it would just basically the brake would just release and it would then,
like the clutch on the gear would
disappear. This was a huge thing, like this. Yeah. Like looking into how this happened to him.
Oh yeah, and so that have this happen to a guy, an actor, like I would say an A-list actor. Like
by that time he was, and that's what also sucks is I think was only on the rise. I think he could have kept going majorly.
Oh yeah, would have done a ton more stuff and been really good. So it's really sad that it happened. So yeah, it would cause the car to roll away. And obviously that's what happened in this situation. Anton's parents actually sued Chrysler, the makers of Jeep, for a wrongful death suit. And they ended up settling out of court, I think, 2018. This was just like nothing more than a super unfortunate accident, like literally an act of God accident that this happened. And this actor was taken away. I wrote in the height of his career. We don't know if it was the height of his career. He's still on the uptick. Like
he could have gone even further, like way even further. I mean, like,
he was an incredible actor. And so we'll never cover Anton Yelchin in depth because he wasn't like truly a musician like every other person on this list, but like we're just gonna leave it there. He died,
like the departure,
horrible, like the departure. Sad death. And yeah, it's I think he's the most unfortunate person, like every other person I'm gonna say played some sort of role here in their own death.
Depending on how conspiracy oriented the people listening are.
But like his was just the most unfortunate accident that could have happened to a person.
Yeah. Literally, like it's right out of Final Destination. It's just not something that just happens to someone.
No, not even fair. Yeah, I remember when it came out, and I'd obviously seen the Star Trek films and really liked it in it, and things like that. So I'd seen him and stuff, and so when it was said that he died, I was like, this one hits close to home. Like that's really, really sad.
I was so bummed because like I say, I'm obsessed with Green Room, but that's like the first. It's not a horror movie by any means, but it is definitely a thriller. And like, just man, he could have been really something in the world of thrills.
Yeah,
he was so good in it.
Yeah, and he was in Fright Night as well, which I think was a really, really good like thriller movie. And gone, man, gone too soon.
God damn, R.I.P.
Austin, let's get into yours. You have probably the biggest person on this list.
No, I know. I try to pick small ones so you guys can.
We already made this joke.
I'll keep covering it because I do actually feel pretty guilty. It's not meant maliciously. So my last selection here is a bit of a doozy to say the least. Kurt Cobain, the singer of the band Nirvana, everybody knows that, you knew that, was found dead in the greenhouse of his Seattle home on April 8th, 1994, though it was determined that he actually died on April 5th. He sat there for 4 days after. So the idea of the 27 Club, like we kind of said earlier, is by no means began with Cobain, but it's kind of the event that put it into the public eye that made it a real media phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
So most everyone knows that the story revolving around this is extremely convoluted and extremely hazy. So for the sake of simplicity, I'm going to say that. Yeah, there's some gray areas. There's some red tape. Yeah, for the sake of simplicity, I'm going to cover just the facts of his death, briefly mention a couple possibilities out there. And if you want to get just neck deep in major conspiracy, you're gonna have to do the reading on your own.
It's so deep. It's the deepest hole you can go in.
I want to ask you guys, totally unprompted, totally off the cuff, when we eventually cover Nirvana, do you want to do an episode on death conspiracy?
We should do an episode alone on his death conspiracy.
Of course.
It's huge.
That in itself is another phenomena. Yes. It's a phenomena inside this phenomena.
Yeah, it's messed up. All right, but we'll get some reading on your own.
Once again, we have an artist that he entered the realm of essentially godhood, and with that comes all the vices known to man. So Kurt allegedly had begun using heroin in 86, which was well before the debut of their album Nevermind, which was released in 91. And apparently he suffered for a really long time with an undiagnosed stomach issue that had him in constant severe pain. He claimed that heroin was the only thing that was able to quell that pain, though one of his close friends went on record saying that the issue was because of the heroin and that he made up having it before, like, which is
phantom pains for the heroin.
It's a weird thing for a friend to say. I don't know, man. So whatever. But so this is not to say that this was the cause of his suicide, but it can definitely be attributed to exacerbating his long struggles with depression.
Yeah.
If that's the story you buy into.
You are really looking to
keep many stories, Arrow.
You are really looking to tease everyone that this isn't the true story.
I'm not walking on the fence, but I'm shimmying alongside it.
Yeah, you're clicking your stick along it as you go.
He doesn't want anyone to know his true intention. That's what he wants.
I'm definitely on one side of it, but you don't know which.
Yes.
So the events leading up to Cobain's death are as follows. While on tour in 1994, Kurt overdosed after combining champagne and Rohypnol, which is another extremely powerful sleep aid prescribed for insomnia. Courtney Love, the singer of band Hole, married to Cobain, would go on to say that this was his first suicide attempt. And that comes into play later. Again, these are the things you got to look into for yourself. So on March 25th, 1990, Love arranged an intervention with Kurt's close friends and some record label execs. And he did eventually agree to get treatment and was checked into the Exodus Recovery Center in L.A. on March 30th, 1994, just 6 days before his death. So Kurt stayed at Exodus for the first night. However, the following evening, he went outside to have a cigarette, scaled the 6-foot fence, and fled. Took a taxi to the airport, flew home to Seattle. But during the next 5 days, none of his friends or family knew his whereabouts. They just knew he was no longer there. The staff couldn't find him. He never checked out. And so this is going to be important to the conspiracy side, because on April 3rd, Courtney Love would hire a private investigator, Tom Grant, to try and locate Kurt. Tom would go on to be one of the main proponents in the idea that Kurt did not commit suicide, but was, however, murdered.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and jump in here really quick. When he flew back to Seattle from this recovery center, if you listen to our series on Guns N' Roses, that's when Duff McKagan saw him on a plane. Just
they sat next to each other.
2 days, huh? Like 2 days before he ended up, you know.
And that's another kind of thing is Duff McKagan said that everyone knew Kurt did not like Guns N' Roses, but they also kind of knew that he mostly had beef with Axl. So apparently he said that when he saw him on the plane, Kurt almost seemed like happy to see him and like in a weirdly good mood. And he said that all the instincts he has with things being wrong, something was wrong. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have another small little thing to throw in here.
Yeah, yeah. Hit me.
Courtney Love's band Hole, their bassist is in the 27 Club.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Yes, God, I really like Hole, though.
It's good.
They are really good.
Courtney's not very good live anymore.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah.
But musically.
Yes.
Yes. No, as Austin said, the fact that if someone is like usually pretty like, I want to say moody, but then all at once they're really, really happy. That can sometimes be a sign that
a red flag.
They Manic. Have That's yeah the des- decided that they're gonna go out. They're gonna end it. So yeah,
happy. Yep. It's over.
If you know someone who usually seems to be a little bit down and all at once they're pretty happy, maybe talk to them and
that see. Could be the time to reach out just as much as the opposite is the
exactly time. Yes.
So for the sake of the story and sanity of the listener at the moment, we're just going to keep moving with the facts here. So on April 8th, 1994, Cobain's body was discovered by an electrician who had arrived to install a security camera. And not to make a joke, that sucks because that is just a little too late. We could have known what was going on. So he found Cobain with a shotgun pointed to his chin, bag of shells at his feet, and a suicide note. Blood tests would later reveal a high concentration of heroin and diazepam, which is another, it's not a barbiturate, it's a benzo, like Ethan said, kind of the same in a sense. And so the
it's
note.
Barbiturate 2.0.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. There you go, V2. Yeah.
Good analogy.
Yeah, Tony's learning. This is what
I'm getting there.
This is what we do it for. So the note was addressed to Boda, which was Kurt's imaginary friend from his childhood, which is pretty peculiar. And the note essentially is him saying that he no longer gets joy from music and hasn't for a long time and hasn't felt good about anything he's done for a long time and doesn't feel genuine in it. Mm-hmm. One of his quotes was that he feels like he should be punching a clock before going on stage, just kind of feeling disingenuous about what is going on in his life. And it's really long. You can find the whole transcript online, so I'm not going to dig into it. But the letter itself is the subject of a lot of suspicion as well. There are parts that seem to maybe be written in different handwriting or in a different context, which, again, he was alone for several days before anyone knew what was going on. So it could have been he wrote part of it at one time, part of it another.
In different states of minds.
Do some goddamn research. Like I said.
You be the judge.
Yeah, not trying to be a dick, but just it's insanely interesting, and it's something you have to just cipher through yourself.
Oh, it's incredibly interesting, yeah.
So that's the factual side of what happened to just everything we know for a fact. That's where he was found, how he was found. As far as the circumstances revolving, you figure it out. I will now open the floor for discussion because I can sense that Ethan's head is about to collapse in on itself and explode like a neutron star.
His mouth has been open for the last 4 minutes.
I feel like his hand has been up, like he wants to say something.
I'm sure if you didn't catch it, Kurt Cobain died from a suicide from a gunshot to the head. Just
self-inflicted
shotgun
in or not in air quotes.
Bingo.
Shotgun shot him in the face. Mm-hmm. He is dead.
That's true. Yeah. So whether it was done with his own.
Courtney Love got a lot of money.
How about it? Yeah.
Maybe that's all that needs to be added.
That's all it was. Courtney Love got a lot of money. That's it.
Maybe that's all that needs to be said.
That's all that needs to be said. You can make your own research.
Just do the research yourself.
I mean, maybe there was so like his drug content in his blood was so high that he probably wasn't capable of pulling the trigger. But I'm just saying, research it yourself.
I feel like when we do the episode like in depth, I feel like we just need to give Ethan off the top 3 minutes. Like 3 minutes on the clock or at the end
I don't want to like alienate people too, because I'm sure there are people out there that really love Courtney Love, and I get that. She has a lot of good music with Hole.
Honestly say I don't have a firm stance. I definitely have suspicions of things, but at the same time, Kurt had both of his uncles and his great uncle all died from suicide. So depression and suicide was definitely something in his family, and it is very much a genetic thing. So there's evidence for both, but to go off of that,
like a lot of people will say, well, Kurt Cobain was the biggest star in the world. Why would he have any reason to be sad? But you have to remember that grunge was like the anti-movement to like glam rock. So grunge was all about being the biggest showman you can be, and grunge was all about so he was so like he hated that they did have tours and they did have like to go do music videos and do press and stuff. He just wanted to be in a small band and to play music for his friends and stuff like that. And so to be the biggest band in the world and to be the lead singer of that band and be an icon, the reason he was depressed was because he was the biggest name in the world. So
he essentially was selling out. I mean, he He wasn't selling out, but he felt like he was selling out.
Exactly.
In the process of pursuing his dream, you get to the point where you've become what you didn't want to.
Yes.
On accident.
Well,
I'm never going to say I believe Courtney Love killed him, because I do not believe that's true. But there is some evidence. There are things.
Oh, I definitely don't think she killed him. Whether or not someone else was hired to is the question.
We'll get into
Not that I have a side on it.
This is going to be a fun episode. We'll fully put our stance out when we've done like a lot of research on it.
So that we can kind of know.
But yeah, it'll be really fun. I'm really excited for that series now, just because
Because then you know what it's going to go into. It's going to go into like true happiness.
Yeah, all of our history. Okay, all of our.
I meant like Foo Fighters. I meant like Dave Grohl, like getting beyond.
Oh yeah,
that's what I meant.
Yeah. Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. All of our history is in true crime. We all enjoy our true crime podcast, whatever. So I'm very excited to be able to do a quote unquote
a little
true
dabble
episode.
Delve in a little bit.
It'll be good. But obviously we're going to cover the music first, because that's the important part. We shouldn't idolize someone's death, whether that be their own by their own accord or by someone else's. But
all right. So initially, for my final artist, I was going to do Diego Farias from Volumes. But today, while I was looking up counterculture icons that died during the end of the 60s, I came across a man named Dickie Pride. It's just a random thing. It really attracted my attention. So this, get ready for a little bit of a ride, because he has a lot of ties to a lot of important people. And all right.
I'm ready.
Interesting. Okay.
So
do it, baby.
Dickie Pride was born Richard Charles Kneller, October 21st, 1941. He was raised in what is now Croydon, which is in South London. His mother encouraged him a lot as a child to sing, because he had a really, really good voice. And at age 11, he won a scholarship to the Royal College of Church Music in London, which was founded in 1927. Now it is the largest church music organization in Britain and has 8,500 members in 40 locations worldwide. It's huge.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Wowzers. Wowzerino.
Yep. So while he was there, he learned to read, sing, and perform music. At 15, though, his father passed away. And also at the same time, Bill Haley released the song Rockin' Robin. So rock and roll was getting really popular. Unfortunately, he had to leave school. So he had to go back home and start working at 15, because he had to support his mother and his family. Very unfortunate.
Yeah.
So he would take
support
at this time
anything.
He didn't give up music though. So he would take any gig he could in London, just pubs and bars all over. He got the attention of a man named Russ Conway, who had music that was charting at the time in London. He was a huge prominent musician and was able to land a regular gig on the only rock and roll show that was aired on TV in Great Britain. It was called Oh Boy, and at the time he was performing with Buddy Wilde. And
Oh Boy.
That's a song by Buddy Holly.
Oh God.
Yeah. So at the time he performed with Marty Wilde and Cliff Richard a lot, and I didn't know either one of those names, but I decided to look them up. And Cliff Richard in the UK is the third best-selling musician of all time in singles in the UK, behind Elvis and the Beatles. So these people that he was huge. Yeah,
didn't know that either.
I had never heard of him, and his music is hardly on Spotify, which I find really weird, but a lot of it's still on YouTube, and he has a small documentary.
Well, they probably just didn't license the music for Spotify.
Yeah.
They probably just didn't allow it to
probably
be
just
on Spotify
as a state
or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
So at
much 16, like the Beatles did for the longest time with iTunes, and then it was a huge deal when they finally got put on iTunes.
Yeah. Same with Tool.
Yeah, Tool. Mm-hmm. They did. Well, that's because Tool didn't want their music to be bastardized. They said it was meant to be listened to front to back as an album.
Goddamn nerds.
Yeah. Nerds. So at 16, he got to perform at the Gaumont State Cinema, which was the biggest cinema in the entire United Kingdom at the time. This was due to his signing with Larry Parnes, who managed the Silver Beatles, who would go on to become the Beatles.
Of course.
At this time, yeah, exactly. So, huge name. At this time, he was also recommended by Parnes to take the stage name Dickie Pride, which is a bold name. I don't know.
Not sure, yeah, why you got pushed to do that name of all names.
Yeah, I would, there's got to be some sort of story that we don't know. There's got to be a reason, right?
I feel like it's just a super dark, disgusting story. But
why couldn't he be like
a huge dicky?
Yeah. Why couldn't he be like the John Denver of England? Why couldn't he, you know, be like, be like Edmund England, Edmund.
Yeah, like something cool, but what he got was Dickie Pride.
Yeah, it's not.
Dickie Liverpool, Dickie Yorkshire.
There we go, all better names.
So
that's fine.
Millions of people are watching this 17-year-old perform on TV all the time.
Dickie Birmingham.
I don't get how I've never heard of him. Like, I'm really confused as to why I've never heard of this guy. I just don't get it. So his debut single was actually a cover of Slippin' and Slidin', which was made popular by Little Richard, who just recently passed away.
That's true. Very recently. Yeah. To when we're recording this. You guys will hear it in 2 months.
Yeah, you'll hear it. He attempted to form bands after this, including the Governors and the Sidewinders, which is a soul band that had actually backed Stevie Wonder at one point while he was touring through the UK. But at this time, Dickie suffered from mental health problems and drug abuse, and he most notably had started using heroin at this time. Like, his solo career was pretty much over, and this is where it starts. So,
yep.
He got married in 1962 and had a child in 1965, but his music career just continually just couldn't meet the high points that he had before when he was obviously so young. Like, he was 16, 17 when he was peaking, like on TV and such. So in 1967, he was admitted to a psychiatric clinic, and he was lobotomized.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That happened to somebody, huh?
In real life. Can you give us a
not just a movie.
Yeah.
Can you give us a 15-second summary on what a lobotomy is?
A lobotomy is when you disconnect the frontal cortex from the rest of your brain. Usually they do it through the eyes. They do it through your eyes. Like, they go in between your eyeball and the nose and usually cut it to disconnect it from your brain.
Often done with a lot of ice pick. Hence the word ice pick lobotomy.
They actually did it to a Kennedy. I can't remember which one, but they did it to one of the Kennedy women because she was acting out at like 13. So they lobotomized her, and she was pretty much mentally challenged for the rest of her life.
Yep. And one thing about the ice pick lobotomy, people think that's like a slang term. That's like how a lot of actual physicians did it, was with an ice pick and a hammer.
Yep. They just kind of like
they were just kinda
tapped it in there till it went in, stirred it around a little bit, and that was it.
Cut.
It's over.
They literally like cut the part of your brain the same way you mince garlic. Just like,
this young man was 25 and he was lobotomized. Like,
insane.
I don't know what was going on.
Grossest thing.
Like, they make it seem like it was just a mental health issue, but that seems like a lot
for
a 25-year-old.
That is back in the day. Like, any kind of mental health was seen as like time. You're a psycho. Yeah,
well, so not even mental. If you were like gay, you were seen as like,
yeah, true. Like, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know,
it's such a different.
I just
time.
Meant like if you have insomnia or depression, you're sociopath.
It's just crazy
somehow.
That they took this once like huge star. Like, he was big in London, and then he was just lobotomized. And then I'll tell
crazy.
The rest. So after Dickie's release from the psychiatric clinic, Dickie somehow managed to relapse. He had gone to a jazz bar and had met with an old friend who was still using heroin, and he decided to do some heroin as well after his lobotomy.
Interesting. I wonder how this is
just like, I was reading it and I was like, what? How have I never heard this in my entire life? I don't get it. So he went from home from after being at the bar and decided to do his nightly routine, which was he would take a methadone and his nightly barbiturate to go to sleep. And they think that he couldn't really think straight. He was lobotomized. Like, he couldn't really think straight. He's heroin. And then just, I'm home now. I'm going to do my nightly routine. I'm going to take this medicine they gave me.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And so on March 26, 1969, Dickie Pride was found dead by his sister due to the drugs in his system. Many fellow artists that he had grown up with and had became famous with, like, had stated how good of a singer he was, and he was one of the best voices in the music industry. And then in 1999, a stage play was written about his life, which was laid out about his very tragic life. It was called Pride and Prejudice, which was actually his last album that he had released as a solo artist that got him dropped from Parn's label.
You mean Pride with Prejudice.
Thank you. Yes.
Not the very, very famous Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, thank you.
This is a spinoff of that.
Pride with Prejudice.
God. That's a clever play on words.
That was not about a man. That was the bottom.
It was. I don't know how I've never heard of this guy. He's in the 27 Club. He's not in any lists. I just happened to come across him by chance.
That's honestly incredible.
So do you think that the lobotomy, like, affected
impaired
him
his judgment
to the point where he's like, well, I'll just relapse, because right. I mean, he was
had no, like, your frontal cortex is like your decision maker.
Yeah,
he didn't know.
Oh
god.
And that then is he insane. Did heroin, and then he went home and he's like, oh, it's nighttime, it's time to do my nightly drugs.
Yeah, well, and the funny thing is, yeah, is that he technically died. I mean, obviously he had heroin in his system, which doesn't do any good to anyone. But he just went home and did the thing that, like, mostly the stuff that happened to him was doctor prescribed. Like, the lobotomy was like a normal procedure for a while. Yeah, and then the barbiturates and stuff were just, like, handed out to people. So. Did most things right and then did one thing wrong, and just the unfortunate cocktail happened to kill him.
It was a wild story, and I was surprised that I'd never heard the guy.
Yeah, me too. What a find. That's awesome. It's not awesome, but awesome story.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good story. Yeah.
So I want to go back. How many people that you guys covered out of the three died because of a drug overdose?
Amy was alcohol, which I guess is technically a drug. So
yeah, so
two out of three, they don't know about Jim Morrison because they didn't do an autopsy.
That's true. That's true. So two out of three for Ethan. Austin, you only had you had two because Amy. No, well, technically Kurt Cobain died because he shot himself in the head, or quote unquote.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So two out of three. I think I didn't have anyone who died of a drug overdose, truthfully. So four out of the nine, musicians.
Wait, was
here.
Joplin from Booze?
Oh no, yeah, you're correct. So five out of the nine, over five half. Out of the nine. So over half of our musicians died because of a drug or alcohol related overdose, which is insane. I mean, and that's kind of the point we're making, is like, a lot of these musicians literally live fast and die young, and
you get thrown into it and you don't really know how to handle it.
Well, and then
a lot of them start so young that they don't really, like, get a grip on what they, like, they need to slow down, and they don't.
Yeah. And then they don't. Yeah. But, and then you look at the other people that we do cover, like our series on Guns N' Roses, they were all, like, hopped up on, like, on heroin, cocaine. They were doing speedballs. Like, they were doing anything.
The rest of
the
Rolling Stones.
Yeah. Everyone else, like all these other people were so heavily involved in drugs and just didn't die. So it's like, well, what made these people, even people who don't die at 27, like, if you look at, you know, like Avicii, who died at 28, his was drug related, and just a ton of other people, like, just crazy how many people die.
I mean, even Shannon Hoon, we talked about last episode. It was cocaine.
Just a lot of them die. They either die like surprisingly young, or they live to be like 90 years old.
Like Ozzy, like, how is that man still alive?
He still can sing. Just fine. Can't talk for shit, but he can still sing.
Melt it, dude.
Let me correct you guys there. My father-in-law was supposed to go to a Ozzy Osbourne concert this year, and it got postponed because he fell and had hurt himself. And then he got postponed again because he had Parkinson's. I don't remember what he got. Diabetes. I don't know. It was something like that. Alzheimer's.
He's like 70, right?
He's falling apart, unfortunately.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, like Keith Richards has done every drug under the freaking sun, and still
he
is going.
He is a skeleton at this point.
He is just a dead person.
Yeah. I think he's had like full blood transfusions, just fully transfused all of his blood. Yeah. 100%.
That's an extent of a lifetime. That's.
Oh, yeah.
That you've lived a full cycle at that point.
But yeah, it's just so fascinating to look at, like, you know, how often these people just die because they just, they need and unfortunate, like you need the heroin and these downers, like the opioids and everything like that, just to like get out of your own head, because like so many people are expecting so much of you. Yeah. But then you need these amphetamines when you're like doing things because you
have the energy to do it and the drive to do it.
It's like Lane Staley. I mean, he was only 34, but still that's how what got him.
Yeah,
from Alice in Chains.
You just have like you, and I'm pretty sure even like the record execs are just like dishing out to these all these like drugs and stuff to be like, no, you have to go do this press release and then or this like all this press tour and stuff like that and stuff. And so here, just take this and you'll be fine. Take this and you'll be fine. Oh, now you're tired. Like literally the stuff that I had to take when I had like surgery on my throat, like. Before they were like, oh, this is the good stuff. This is the stuff Michael Jackson took when he was going to sleep. Like,
awesome. Cool.
Yeah. It was like, okay. Cool. They just would drug you to keep you awake and they drug you to make you fall asleep and stuff. Yeah. So it's like, just these people got unlucky to fall into this club, but it's not, you know, while this is obviously the most common age that musicians and artists die at, it is not the only age that they die at. And people are pushing musicians a little too hard. So
yes,
we will definitely do another episode on the 27 Club, because while we covered some big ones here, there are some really fascinating stories of like people who didn't die because of drug and alcohol related deaths. Like they died in, like I said, car crashes, or there's one guy that I was going to cover who died because he touched a live wire on stage and just electrocuted himself to death and just really freaky stuff like that.
Man.
So yeah. So it's like, we're going to do this again, because this was another good, like the one hit wonders. This was just a good, like,
there's still a lot of people we didn't.
Or like easy Def episode. Leopard, yeah.
Their drummer.
He didn't die. He just lost.
He just lost, yeah,
he just lost a leg.
Yeah.
No, he lost an arm.
Arm. Sorry.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah.
He was involved in a car crash, roll over, the car landed on his arm, kept rolling, ripped his arm off, and then that was right when they were going to fame. And then he said, I'll just keep being the drummer.
I'll just keep one playing drummer. Drums.
That's how Jonah Hill almost lost his arm, and his arm is all disgusting and scarred.
Oh, God. Did not know that.
Have you ever seen it? Watch Superbad, pause it on his right arm. It's like there's a part where it's like down to the bone. There's just like a chunk that you can see is not meat.
What?
Apparently when he was 16, he was like a really shitty kid, and him and his friend stole his mom's SUV and they flipped it and he had his arm hanging out of it.
Yeah.
That was when he was like, all right, I got to turn my life around, and decided to try acting.
God.
And then he did. Now he's a huge actor. Oh God. Okay. So yes, we will do another series on the 27 Club in the future. And we're excited for it. It was a darker episode.
I don't know if excited's the word, it is interesting. It's really interesting.
We will be happy to bring you the information, but we will not be happy to talk about it.
Yeah, there you
go. and we may do an episode on like just crazy musicians' deaths, like in the future, just not 27 years old, but just like, you know, musicians who may be a little bit smaller but died in really crazy ways. We may talk about that as well, because that also seems to be a goofy phenomena. So we'll talk about that. But for right now, we're going to leave that there, because we've wrapped it up. We've done what we've needed to do. So if you want to find us on social media, you can do that everywhere. We're on N5 on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, WERE on N5. If you want to find me anywhere, you can find me. Anton is on N5 on Twitter and Instagram, Anton, like Yelchin, is on N5. Hey. I will be posting pictures of my new baby son that is born when you're listening to this. Not while I'm recording this. I'm recording this actually 2 days before we are to go to the hospital to be induced. So pretty scary stuff.
Pretty exciting, pretty scary.
Bingo. Yes. So follow me on there and follow my fun story of me being a dad for the second time. If you want to follow Ethan anywhere, he's got two kids as well, if you wanted to know.
Yeah, I do. I am on Twitter as Ethan Bonin, B-O-N-I-N. I am on Instagram as Bones for Bonin. And I'm always going to say, I'm never going to stop. Email us. Are on N5@gmail.com. Please, with any.
We'd love it. We'd love some interaction.
Austin, what are you?
That is, we are on N5. That's the tricky one. We are on N5. Oh,
God, we're throwing curveballs at you left and right. Pay attention.
Keep you on your toes. Austin has no kids.
No, I don't have it. Yeah.
None.
And
zero.
I'm also not on social media almost at all is the thing about it. So you can find me, though, if you want to, on Twitter as at THOMAAAF, as in Frank. Instagram is Austin_Thomas09. And again, just follow our page, because Ethan's got the goods. He's putting in the work.
We hit 500 today.
Yeah,
dude.
We hit 500 today.
Hell yeah.
I'll take it.
Again, today being May 27th. Hopefully by the time you guys are hearing this, we have 2,000 followers. Thousands.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll...
Trillions.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
It'll somehow quadruple in a month.
Hey, man, it could happen. You don't know. So if you are liking what you've heard, if you've listened to past episodes or this episode and want to rate us and review us on iTunes or anywhere that you do that, please do that. If you really like us and you really want to support us, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/onandfive. Just give us
money.
You can give us like a minimum dollar a month, and you can check out all of our extra stuff we put out. Like, we try to put out one extra thing per like band we're covering. We're not great at it, but we're just trying to give a little bit extra content. You can also check out all of our episodes a day early, so they release on Sunday instead of Monday morning. So you can see all of our stuff there. But at the very least, please like and review us. That helps us get seen more and helps us to get to the point where we're trying to get to. So for the time being, we're going to leave it. Does anyone have a song they want to sing from the selection of... Actually, I got one.
Come as you are. As you are.